You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Otto toku ingoa. Nau mai, hare mai ki te wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora, and welcome to The Wire for Rāpā Wednesday. I'm your host Otto, and I'll be with you for the next hour. I'm also joined by producer Max. Ifai Akine coming up on the show for our weekly catch-up with the Green Party. I spoke with MP Ricardo Menendez-March about the government's plan to purchase $2.7 billion worth of US-made aircraft to replace the Defense Force's current 757s, the High Court case against the disestablishment of Te Aka Whai Ora, the Māori Health Authority, and the Green Party's petition to restore funding to polytechnics. And I spoke with Valerie Morse from Peace Action Wellington for a follow-up conversation about the government's plan to purchase almost $3 billion worth of military aircraft. Max, what have you got for us?
I speak to Child Fund CEO Josie Pagani to talk about the recent declaration of a famine in Gaza. And I also speak to Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa co-chair John Minto to talk about the potential vote to suspend Israel from the United Nations, which is led by Turkey.
Hey, aha o whakaro. I'd love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces, so get in touch. Tuku patu I mai, text in on 5395 or waia mai rane. Give us a call in the studio on 309-3879. Kaua e ware ware e ahe ana koutou, te whakarongo ki ene kōrero anō. He pakiheri rokiroki marunga e te pai, tukutuku o irerangi pōho, me haere ki 95BFM e rakati.com. You can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez-March.
Last week, Defence Minister Judith Collins and Foreign Minister Winston Peters revealed plans to purchase almost $3 billion worth of US aircraft to replace the Defence Force's aging 757s. The five MH-60R Seahawk helicopters, manufactured by Lockheed Martin, and two Airbus A321XLR aircraft would be procured directly through the United States Foreign Military Sales Program. This week, a legal challenge against the disestablishment of Te Aka Whai Ora, the Māori Health Authority, will be heard in the High Court in Wellington and will be argued on the grounds that the government breached the Te Tiriti o Waitangi and the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act when making the decision to establish the authority. And the Green Party recently launched a petition calling on the government to restore adequate funding to polytechnics and to reverse cuts to vocational education and training. For our weekly catch-up with the Green Party, I spoke with MP Ricardo Menendez-March to get the party's take on all of these issues. What was the Green Party's reaction to the government's aircraft expenditure plans?
Yeah, look, there's two key issues here. One of them is, of course, we need an adequate defence force that can support our country when there's natural disasters or provide aid in the Pacific. But we should not be purchasing from the United States under the Trump administration at a time where they're tying themselves to genocidal regimes. And so we have concerns about, A, the fact that we've gone into this with this procurement process and that the government then is unwilling to spend money on things like child poverty, but is telling us just billions of dollars for defense equipment.
So just going off what you said, do you think this is an effective use of public spending, especially considering the number of public sector cuts that have come about during this government's current term?
While having a defense force fleet that can support us when there's natural disasters is important, it does reek of being out of touch with everyday priorities when the government is telling us that there's no money for things like tackling child poverty, to invest in building new state housing so that we can end homelessness, and to pay our lowest paid women what they deserve. And so on the one hand, they're telling us there's no money for the things that make people's lives better, but there's billions of dollars for military equipment. And that's really problematic and something that the Greens would change should we get into power.
Do you think this purchase indicates that the government is trying to establish closer ties with the United States and especially the Trump administration?
The government has unfortunately been seeking to tighten the relationship we have with the United States. We've seen that with the rolling out of the red carpet for the FBI office in Wellington, only for us to then be slapped with tariffs less than 24 hours after. And it just shows that this government is moving away from having an independent foreign policy and is tying ourselves more and more to the Trump administration, which is something that I think most people would be concerned about, considering the Trump administration's dismantling of democracy as well as supporting genocidal regimes like Israel.
Judith Collins said that the necessity to replace our current aircraft is based on rising global tensions, but do you think that New Zealand faces any current threats that would justify this expenditure?
The issue with Judith Collins' comments is that she's not really telling us which war are we going to be tying ourselves to, and that's not the main issue that our Defence Force faces, which is an inability to be able to adequately respond to natural disasters or to provide aid in the Pacific. That is a very different issue from justifying billions of dollars worth of expenditure due to, you know, quote-unquote, rising tensions. We have a role to play in the Pacific, but getting potentially embroiled in wars isn't one of those.
And how would a Greens-led government ensure that the Defence Force is up to date and guide Aotearoa in the face of global tensions?
Well, we would be procuring equipment that genuinely serves the purpose of combating natural disasters and providing aid. And we would have a procurement process that does not tie ourselves to administrations that are completely dismantling democracies, human rights, and supporting genocidal regimes. At the same time, we wouldn't accept this austerity narrative that tells us that there is no money to tackle poverty, but there is billions of dollars for military equipment.
All right, moving on to the next topic. A legal challenge against the disestablishment of Te Aka Whai Ora, the Māori Health Authority, will be heard in the High Court in Wellington later this week. The case will be argued on the grounds that the government breached Te Tiriti o Waitangi and the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act when making the decision to disestablish the Māori Health Authority. So my next question is, where does the Green Party stand regarding the High Court case against the disestablishment of Te Aka Whai Ora?
Yeah, all power to the people taking this case to the High Court. The arguments that I understand that they're using have both to do with the lax consultation with Māori in relationship to the dismantling of the Māori Health Authority, as well as the fact that the government didn't put in place an adequate plan to address health inequities that Māori face. The Greens have been really clear that we would re-establish Te Aka Whai Ora because we actually acknowledge and understand that we have to provide services that are by Māori for Māori to tackle health inequities. And no one, except the very wealthy few, benefits from having such steep health inequities in our system because our hospitals are currently overridden by people who have been failed by successive governments who are getting diseases that are preventable because of poverty, inequality, colonization.
Do you think this case could have a significant outcome on how the government approaches Māori health outcomes and their Te Tiriti obligations related to that?
Well, I sure hope that they're successful, but I think people should not have to take issues like these to the High Court. We should have governments that acknowledges that we need adequate plans to address health inequities, including the ones that Māori face. And so what we are focusing on ourselves is changing the government so that we can reestablish Te Aka Whai Ora and actually have a health system that serves the needs of our people instead of toying with things like privatization that will take us down a route like the United States, where people are dying because they can't afford basic medicines.
And if the judgment of this case goes in favor of the government and against the applicants, how will the Greens challenge both the verdict of that case and the government's current policies regarding Māori health outcomes?
Well, as we've said, we're not waiting for the High Court outcome for us to be clear that we need to reestablish Te Aka Whai Ora and prioritize tackling health inequities within our system. This is why we've been clear that one of the key things that we could be investing in is on things like Māori suicide prevention programs, free GPs that are publicly owned, being delivered in communities where the health inequities are greatest. And these are the things that will make a big difference in ensuring that people are not showing up to hospital sick and in pain for conditions that could have been addressed by a GP or by having decent incomes and healthy housing.
All right, moving on to the last topic. The Greens recently launched a petition calling on the government to restore adequate funding to polytechnics and to reverse cuts to vocational education and training. Next, I'd like to ask if you can tell us about this petition and your calls in your own words.
Vocational education actually trains the next generation of our workforce that will help us build more state housing, infrastructure projects that will work with some of our most disenfranchised communities with professions like social work. And we should be investing in vocational education as opposed to dismantling it. we're really concerned that what the government is doing in the vocational education space will see several courses and faculties closing down, with jobs being lost and young people being left with fewer opportunities to enter into training and subsequently employment.
Would you say that there's strong support from the public to restore funding and reverse cuts to our polytechnics?
I think the public expects our government to be supporting vocational education. We can't have a government that both says that they don't want people being on the benefit while at the same time not investing in the very same things that give young people an opportunity to train and acquire skills that leads them into employment pathways. And so I think the public expects a strong vocational education sector and a government that is genuinely willing to fund it.
As well as direct job losses on campuses, how do you expect cuts to tertiary education to impact the job market across the whole of Aotearoa?
We know that some of the campuses that risk losing courses or closing altogether are in our rural communities. Vocational education is critical to ensuring that there's training and employment pathways for young people in rural communities as well. And we know that these are some of the areas that are facing greatest economic inequality, with greater poverty, greater homelessness, compared to the general population. And so we're really concerned about the impacts on rural communities, and this is why we need a government that is funding vocational education so we can have well-paid, well-trained tradies that are helping us build our country.
There's also been concerns from officials from the Ministry of Social Development and Ministry of Education that the demerger of Te Pūkenga, the New Zealand Institute of Skills and Technology, would lead to beneficiaries spending longer on JobSeeker. Is this a concern that the Green Party shares as well?
The main concern that we have in relationship to that is that the advice speaks for itself, is that it's leaving young people with less opportunities to enter into training and subsequently employment. But what this tells us is that the government's plans to address the growing number of people without those employment opportunities is to simply have more benefit sanctions as opposed to investing in the very same things that create jobs and educational and training opportunities in the first place. And that looks like investing in the state housing build program so that there's more jobs available and investing in vocational education institutions so that young people can enter into training.
And that was Green Party MP Ricardo Menendez-March talking to us about the government's plan to purchase $2.7 billion worth of US-made aircraft, the High Court case against the disestablishment of Te Aka Whai Ora, the Māori Health Authority, and the Green Party's petition to restore funding to polytechnics.
That was the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez-March.
We don't agree with violence. We do not agree with the government. We do.
The Wire.
Following our previous conversation with the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez-March, we spoke with Valerie Morse from Peace Action Wellington about the government's plan to replace the Defence Force's 757s with $2.7 billion worth of US aircraft. Valerie said that the purchase was disappointing, given the context of cuts to public services and infrastructure that have occurred within the government's current term, and that it was indicative of New Zealand potentially being brought into a wider regional or global conflict by the United States. All right, so to begin, what was your reaction to the government's plan to spend almost $3 billion on helicopters from the United States Foreign Military Sales Program?
Very distressed and disappointed to hear about this large public expenditure on weapons of war at the moment where our public infrastructure, our health system is absolutely crumbling. And I have real questions about whether these are the tools that are actually needed to do the job.
Judith Collins said that the necessity to replace our current aircraft was based on rising global tensions. But do you think this is an adequate way for New Zealand to respond to said tensions?
Well, I guess what I would say is, in my view, the United States and Australia, two of New Zealand's closest defense partners, are primarily responsible for rising global tensions. In particular, the United States. The United States is the single largest supplier of weapons and foreign aid to Israel, and to Egypt, for that matter, and to Saudi Arabia. It is the largest supplier of arms around the world. They are responsible for the genocide in Gaza. They are responsible for the threatening behavior against the Chinese in all across the Pacific. So I really question that kind of framing. They say there's rising global tensions, but the reality is that it's our defense partners, our defense allies, who are responsible for those rising global tensions. This isn't sort of like in a vacuum, like there's this sort of ether of rising global tensions. These are being specifically ratcheted up by the United States.
Do you think this purchase indicates that New Zealand might be brought into a wider regional or global conflict by the United States?
That's exactly where this is headed. I mean, this is exactly, you know, I see these Defense Force, the U.S. Air Force, U.S. military planes coming in and out of Wellington pretty much every single week. This has been a hardcore press by the United States military and the U.S. regime to essentially drag New Zealand into their war, to pull them closer into their regime, and to effectively establish kind of a U.S. military base here in Aotearoa. So along with this defense purchase, we heard just 2 weeks ago them saying that U.S. military troops are now going to start training in New Zealand.
Do you think that New Zealand faces any regional threats at all that could justify this kind of purchase?
I guess what I would say is the regional threats that we face have been very, very clearly outlined in previous defense capability and defense white papers. And those are things like climate change, corruption and organized crime. So there are threats, absolutely, but they are not the threats that the United States military is talking about.
So earlier you mentioned that this expenditure is not an effective use of public spending. Could you go into that a little bit more?
What I would say is that most people across Aotearoa want decent health services. Like this is, we see week in and week out, we've got crumbling health infrastructure. We've got doctors, nurses, and midwives who are literally begging for more money to save people's lives. You know, the people of Dunedin are begging for a new hospital. We've got people in Whangarei begging to have a new hospital. And all around the country, we've got effectively huge waiting lists of people and a government that's intent on privatizing health services. And at this, in the very same moment, in the same breath that they announce a $12 billion spend up on defense, they are attacking relentlessly our health services and undermining our ability to essentially care for people in this country. So, you know, this is $3 billion. That's a brand new hospital for an entire city. It's just simply certainly the wrong kind of spending at this stage. And that isn't to say that there aren't things that we need to be doing to address the kinds of regional threats that I was talking about, but military spending isn't the response that we need.
Are there any other ways to upgrade the Defense Forces equipment, say for civil defense or disaster relief efforts, that you think would be better suited?
I think that's a wonderful question. When Cyclone Gabrielle happened over in Hawke's Bay, it hit Auckland very, very hard. The Defense Force tried to go over to assist the community and, in fact, put out a number of press releases saying how wonderful a job they did. But in fact, arrived over there and was unable to deliver water because they actually hadn't bothered to get certified to be a water carrier. And so the communities, they were ill-equipped to actually do the kind of humanitarian and disaster relief stuff that they talk about doing. There's a whole range of different options for them to do humanitarian work, to do civil defense and preparation for the kind of climate change that we're going to start seeing very seriously here in Aotearoa. And that might involve buying things like civil engineering equipment, like bulldozers, earth movers, things like that, so that they can quickly and easily clear roads, you know, that they can rebuild infrastructure, things like bridges very quickly. But also that, you know, the money that we're talking about, the resources that we're talking about really need to go into addressing climate change. And that's something that the government has also basically abandoned their responsibility for.
All right. Well, I think that's about everything from me. But is there anything else you'd like to add before you finish off?
The one thing I really wanted to add about this particular sale, which is really worrying, is that last year this was supposed to be a competitive tender. This is $3 billion worth of public money. So there were a couple of different companies that were involved in that. All of a sudden now, this has turned into a foreign military sale that's a done deal with a particular U.S. company. And there's really no transparency about that. You know, there are a lot of questions about why it is that we decided, you know, we have to kind of take Judith Collins' word that somehow this is a better deal for New Zealand. But the reality is that corruption across the defense sector, across military weapon sales, is absolutely rampant. You know, so the fact that this contract for $3 billion is not a competitive tender is kind of outrageous to me. Like, there is really the lack of kind of clarity about how this was arrived at, except that Lockheed Martin basically came along and said, oh, we wouldn't mind having a couple of billion dollars more worth of business in it. And I'm sure the interoperability that New Zealand Defence Force would have with Australia and the United States is absolutely the most important thing. So it really shows that New Zealand's Defence Force is being primed to simply be a kind of an accessory or an auxiliary force to the United States military, including buying the same equipment, even though that might really not be even just for the purchase of helicopters alone, if that's what we're talking about. If you say, okay, we want to buy helicopters, you would really want to look at what the terms of those, you know, what the benefits of a particular helicopter over another might be to meet our specific needs. But we haven't done that. Instead, we've just said, oh, yeah, we'll buy the ones the United States wants us to buy. So I think that's another reason why we should be really concerned about kind of military spending in general. And there's a number of documentaries and really very high profile cases that show this incredible corruption across the military industrial complex.
Actually, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about that as well. Could you tell us a bit more about what you know about the corruption in the Defense Force and how this purchase ties into that?
What I would say is that the guy who used to be the head of the New Zealand Air Force, Kevin Short, he's now the head of Lockheed Martin in Australia. You know, like there is this, we talk about this particularly in the United States, this kind of revolving door between the Pentagon and the defense industries, the weapons manufacturers like Lockheed, like Raytheon, like General Dynamics. So these guys go into private sector after they've done their term of military service. Well, the reality is that's exactly what we're seeing now here in New Zealand is these guys come out of the military and they go straight into very high profile defense industry jobs where they've got a whole, you know, they take a whole lot of that knowledge with them and a whole lot of the connections with them. And so everything becomes, you know, very, very smooth. And you know, I'm not in any way suggesting that particular person is engaged in corrupt activities. I'm simply saying that the industry across the world is extremely well known for corrupt practices, for bribery of governments. And yeah, like there are very high profile cases and also, you know, just incredible cost overruns, you know, overruns of hundreds of millions of dollars. And we saw that the last time Lockheed did the upgrade of the frigates. You know, it went from being a job that was about $490 million to being about $700 million. You know, this is a stunning bad accounting or estimation, you know, like anybody else would be hauled over the coals. But no, that doesn't really happen. You know, there's no penalties for Lockheed Martin. They just get more and more jobs.
And that was Valerie Morse from Peace Action Wellington speaking to us about the government's plan to purchase almost $3 billion in military aircraft. We'll be right back after this quick break. Keep it on the B.
95 BFM. We'll be right back.
95.
Journey awaits you at Frida Margolis with a performance of The Amber Temple.
Creeping up and down your spine.
Witness music and dance colliding as singer-songwriter Julian Temple and contemporary dancer Amber Stevens draw the audience into a world of mystery with curious characters and strange events. The Amber Temple, Frida Margolis in Grey Lynn, Sunday, August 31st, and at Sawmill Cafe, Saturday, September 6th. Pre-sales available now at Under the Radar.
Jazz Cigarette, Bob Hope, Dubage, Jar Rastafari, Wacky Backy, Mez, Mary Jane, Marley, Sheba Cheba.
What if you call it?
Muggles.
Marijuana Media has you covered. Every Thursday on 95BFM Drive, join Chris Fowley from Normal for the good word on law reform, cannabis in the media, and the latest in green science. Marijuana Media, 4:20 every Thursday on 95BFM Drive, thanks to The Hemp Store. Visit them at 253 K Road or shop online at hempstore.co.nz.
The world-famous True School Hip Hop Show.
Thursday nights, take a deep dive into all things hip-hop with BFM's True School. Checking in on current and historical flows, beats, and grooves, both local and international. A Radio B institution spanning decades of solid cuts and the one show to know.
We like the breeze float straight out of our lids.
True School Hip Hop Show.
Keeping you clued in on what's fronting in the world of hip-hop.
True School Hip Hop Show.
Who you calling a bitch?
Thursdays from 9 to 11 p.m. with Get Ban, Luz, Max, Barry, and Eve Love in the area.
On 95 BFM.
One of Aotearoa's most beloved artists, Bec Runga, is set to deliver an exceptional evening of music and song. Saturday, September 6th. Catch Beck performing songs from her bountiful catalogue, reinterpreted for orchestra and presented together with the majestic Auckland Philharmonia. Don't miss the inimitable Beck Runga. Live for one night only with the Auckland Phil, Saturday, September 6th at the Artea Centre. Tickets available now from aucklandphil.nz.
They're simply the Beths. They have a new album coming out and we have copies for B-card holders to win. So if you want to win a copy of Straight Line Was a Lie, then all you have to do is tune into Breakfast all week and listen out for your cue to enter. I wanna throw the can- Straight Line Was a Lie, the new album from The Biths, out this Friday on CD or vinyl at all good stores that sell music.
Is it too late in the process, though, to change that?
Nothing's too late, bro. Everything's made up in politics.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire on 95BFM. Let us know your thoughts on any of these pieces today. Text in on 5395 or call us on 309-3879. Late last week, the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, declared a famine in Gaza, warning that 41,000 children are at a heightened risk of death. The report said that the number of people facing what they referred to as emergency conditions is expected to rise to 1.14 million people, or around half of the total population of Gaza, which is currently around 2.1 million people. Under IPC criteria, a famine can only be formally declared when three conditions are met: at least 20% of households face extreme food shortages, at least 30% are acutely malnourished, and two or more people per 10,000 die each day from hunger or hunger-related diseases. To talk about what is only the fifth declared famine in the last 15 years, I spoke with Child Fund CEO Josie Pagani to discuss what New Zealand can do to immediately help the situation. First of all, what did you make of this official declaration of a famine in Gaza?
This is quite extraordinary because it's only the fifth time in 15 years that famine has been declared in the whole world. So the last famine declaration was just last year in Sudan, in the North Darfur region. And it's also the first time ever in the Middle East region that an official famine has been declared. So for an official famine, it means that the majority of people are at a catastrophic level of hunger. In other words, they're close to death. So, you know, it is the highest level of hunger deprivation that the IPC can call on. And it is quite extraordinary that this has happened now when you think, you know, only five times in 15 years that this has been declared. So, yeah, it's pretty shocking.
And can you explain how urgent the situation is and how big a difference a couple of days can make in Gaza?
The thing about the definition of catastrophic hunger is that you could potentially be days away from death. So every hour, let alone every day, makes a difference. So what we're seeing in Gaza and those organisations that have partners on the ground trying to hand out food and water, you've got about 1.1 million people, so over a million people in Gaza. And remember, the population of Gaza is only about 2 million. So you've got, you know, half the population in an extreme situation of hunger. You've also got about 90% of the population internally displaced. So I'm not sure in my lifetime I've ever seen something quite as awful and kind of catastrophic as this. So what we're trying to do is get trucks across the border, and the problem is that there's been a blockade, so there's a trickle of aid going through, a trickle of water, not nearly enough when you think that over a million people are facing this kind of extreme hunger.
Child Fund has announced that they are calling on the government to commit to recognising the state of Palestine. Why do you think the government has been so hesitant to make that step, given that many of our allies are heading in that direction?
It's interesting because about 147 of all countries, but in the UN there's 193 countries across the world, so 147, so that's the majority, have already recognised a Palestinian state. And just recently, in the last few weeks, we've seen some of the bigger states and some of the permanent members of the Security Council, so Britain, France, Germany, say that they intend to recognise Palestine at the next UN meeting, which is in September, so really only weeks away. I think our government is being careful, and I understand the delicacy around that. I mean, you've still got Hamas in Palestine. They're going to work behind the scenes of the countries to try and get a ceasefire. But I think that the importance of recognising Palestine as a state now is not to say that Hamas should be the government, because they absolutely shouldn't be. It's to say that the two-state solution still exists, and that Palestinians need to know that the world recognises their right to a state just as it recognises Israel's right to a state. So the symbolic move, I think, would help us put a lot of pressure politically on the Israeli government to allow more of the trucks, with AIDS through immediately. And as you said, every day, every hour counts for saving lives right now. So if the New Zealand government can make a strong stand on saying they're joining the UK, France, Canada in planning to recognise Palestine, I think this will put a lot of political pressure on the government of Israel to just let this trip through.
How do you think that New Zealanders feel about our government's hesitation to move in that direction?
I think we've found as an aid agency that people are quite confused about the issue. They're absolutely appalled at what they're seeing on the news, but they're also feeling appalled at what Hamas did on October the 7th to a bunch of young people who, you know, were massacred and raped and murdered at concerts. So I think New Zealand quite confused about what to do here and who the goodies and the baddies are, but they're absolutely appalled by what they're seeing in Gaza at the moment, and the images are just shocking. So I think what New Zealanders feel is, put the politics aside, for God's sake, get food and water to these kids in Gaza. And the thing about aid agencies and other New Zealand aid agencies who have local partners on the ground doing the aid delivery right now as we speak, that we politics aside, let us do the humanitarian work. Let us save lives. That's what they're for. We're not taking sides. We're not making political statements. We just want to get food and water to kids and their families right now. And I think New Zealanders get that. We're a practical people. We like pragmatic solutions. And I think you would find that most New Zealanders just want to see food and water get to where it's needed right now. And the politics is more complicated. They get that. But there's a humanitarian crisis now and they want to see it addressed.
And you've talked about delivering aid and the blockades and the troubles getting into Gaza, and specifically with the US government. What can New Zealand do to increase pressure on the government to help out the situation in Gaza?
I think we can put a lot more pressure on the US. And, you know, clearly President Trump has wanted to find some solution and so far failed. So if the New Zealand government can, you know, constructively help the US government with a plan for a ceasefire and for that immediate humanitarian letter to come across the borders, I think there's more that we can do. New Zealand really does influence way above you would expect it to as a small country. We're well respected. We've been very careful politically not to take sides over issues. We try and come in as a sort of neutral broker who can call out humanitarian crisis. We did it in Rwanda when there was a looming massacre in genocide in Rwanda, and we were one of the few countries that stood up to say we need to stop this happening. Now, you know, we failed, but people remember, countries like Rwanda remember that New Zealand stood up and took the right side in history at that time, and I think we can do that again.
You are also calling for an Arab-led peace plan. Can you explain what this looks like?
Yes, so there already is one in existence. I mean, this is not something that New Zealand government has come up with or the Child Fund has come up with. So it's primarily by Egypt, the government in Egypt, with a coordinated group of Arab countries in the region, so Jordan, UAE, Gulf states and so on. So I think looking to the future, the only solution that's going to work in terms of maintaining peace in the region is for it to be an Arab-led, region-led peace process and with peacekeepers from Arab countries. So, you know, yes, countries like New Zealand should be involved. We should be there supporting peace process. But I think the key thing here is that it needs to be led by those countries in the region who have the most influence and also the most knowledge of how to make this work. So there is a peace plan there, and it would involve, you know, an interim government, again, led by Arab states and Palestinians with Israel's input as well. So it would not be a government led by Hamas. The plan, as I understand it, is very much to put in an interim government to move towards a democratic election process and to have peacekeepers that are from the Middle East, from the region, with the support of the West. So I think that's the most hopeful long-term solution. But what we're focused on right now, of course, is the immediate humanitarian crisis that needs an immediate response. And we want the New Zealand government to increase the pressure that they're putting on you know, the US and on other countries and on Israel, government of Israel, to remove immediately that blockade stopping our trucks getting through with food and water.
Thanks, Josie. That was my final question. But was there anything else that you wanted to add?
No, not really, Max. I mean, just that I get it that New Zealanders feel that this is a very complex political issue, but they're absolutely appalled at the humanitarian horror that they're seeing on the news and online. So there are things we can do, and certainly for us at Child Fund, you know, we're calling on New Zealanders to donate, but also there are other charities, New Zealand charities out there. We're working together, whether it's Child Fund, Save the Children, World Vision, Tear Fund. We coordinate our efforts as much as possible, and, you know, donate to whatever charity you want. We would like you to donate to Child Fund, but because we've got local people on the ground who are literally handing out that food and handing out water right now, so we know that that money will get straight to where it's needed. So, you know, we're calling on New Zealanders to help us do that work, and that's something I think everybody can do in the short term. The longer term issues are harder to solve, but the short term ones are pretty basic. We need money to get food and water to kids and families in Gaza.
And that was Child Fund CEO Josie Bagani on the famine in Gaza, why New Zealand should recognise a Palestinian state, and what our government could do to immediately help. If you want to donate to Child Fund, you can head to their website at childfund.org.nz. We'll be right back after this short break.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
Do you want to go again? Wire on 95BFM. Once again, let us know your thoughts on any of these pieces today. Text us on 5395 or call us on 309-3879. Following on from our previous chat, recent events have led to Turkey potentially pursuing a vote to suspend Israel from the United Nations. Turkey Foreign Minister Hakan Fidan has told the Organization of Islamic Cooperation in Riyadh that Israel should be suspended from the crucial meeting of the General Assembly next month due to its genocidal aggression. In response to this, Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa co-chair John Minto has urged New Zealand Foreign Minister Winston Peters to take a stand on this issue. To discuss a potential vote to suspend Israel from next month's United Nations General Assembly meeting, as well as New Zealand's current stance on Israel and Gaza, I spoke with John Minto.
Can you explain what Turkey might be hoping for in an Israeli suspension from the United Nations?
Well, I think what countries around the world are looking at is how they can work around the United States veto. How can they take effective action against Israel, which would normally go through the Security Council and would be vetoed by the US? And one of those things is the General Assembly of the United Nations has the opportunity of doing two things. They can vote to suspend Israel in the way that they suspended South Africa in 1974 because of its apartheid policies. Israel's apartheid policies should result in the same sanction, given the fact that they've backed up their apartheid policies with this genocidal campaign against Palestinians in Gaza. So I think that's, you know, countries are looking for ways around it, and New Zealand is a country that should support those measures. We should not be hanging around at the back of the line with the US. So the other thing that the General Assembly can do is develop a Uniting for Peace resolution under the UN Charter, which would involve the UN essentially forcing a humanitarian aid through into Gaza, with basically, to be frank, an armed escort to get that food through to Gaza. The food's there, it's stacked up at the border, trucks are laden with it, and Israel's refusing to allow those trucks in, except in, you know, in a sort of drip-fed kind of way.
And how successful do you think the vote to suspend Israel from the United Nations will be if it were to happen?
Well, I think it will depend very much on what's happening right now and what will happen over the next 6 weeks. There will be intensive lobbying to both for the motion and against it. And I think the motion will only be put if there's going to be a clear majority to support it. So again, the role of a country like New Zealand is really important. We can say that we are totally appalled at what Israel has done and is doing in Gaza, the mass killing and mass starvation of civilians in Gaza, and we can hold them to account in one way at least by suspending their membership from the UN General Assembly.
We've recently seen a famine declared in Gaza, along with Israel once again killing journalists, although Netanyahu says that was a mistake. What do you think it would take for New Zealand to make a move like voting for Israeli suspension from the United Nations?
They won't do it unless they are heavily pressured to do it, and that means the New Zealand people. We have to be out there really putting pressure on our members of parliament to get them to support this suspension of Israel. And I think if we've learned nothing over the last 22 months, it is that our government is very much on side with Israel. We've got our foreign minister who keeps repeating Israeli propaganda lies again and again and again. And we have to work on other MPs to have high expectations that finally the government will do something effective to stop the genocide.
As you said before, you see a similarity to the situation to 1974 when South Africa was suspended from General Assembly because it practiced apartheid. Why are these two situations similar from your perspective?
Well, I think they're similar in principle. I mean, you can always find lots of details where they're different, but they're similar in principle in that you've got, well, if I put it in the words of one of the human rights groups in Israel, B'Tselem, they describe Israel as a regime of Jewish supremacy from the river to the sea, that is, from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. So every Palestinian living in historic Palestine suffers discrimination. And in the same way that black South Africans suffered intense discrimination in South Africa under the apartheid system there. So I think the similarities are, you know, we're talking about a regime of racial supremacy. So Israel had that, has that, South Africa had that. So I think the similarities are very, very strong. The differences are that Israel has a much more brutal approach to suppressing Palestinians than white South Africans had to oppressing black South Africans.
How bad a look is it for the United Nations to have a membership granted to a state that's been confirmed to play a role in starting a famine along with other war crimes?
You know, I think this is the very thing. We have to say, when is the world going to hold Israel to account? We know the US will not support this motion, and if it came up at the Security Council, it would be rejected. The US would veto it away, as they've vetoed every other accountability that the world has tried to put on Israel. So this is something the world can do. It would be symbolic, but it would be extremely powerful symbolism to have Israel thrown out of the General Assembly. It would be the world saying that this behaviour by Israel is utterly unacceptable, and its 76-year occupation of Palestine is absolutely unacceptable, and the world will finally take some measures to hold it to account.
What do you make of New Zealand's response and stance on Israel in recent weeks? Is it enough, and what else would you like to see?
The government's approach on Israel has been just appalling. We've had words and words and words and words. For 22 months, we've had words. And it's only just in the last, maybe the last 6 weeks, the last 2 months, that the government has used the word condemn in regard to anything Israel's done. We've seen words, 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 and words have proven to be absolutely hopeless in trying to hold Israel to account. Netanyahu takes no notice whatever. And I think if we have learned anything, is that Israel will only take notice of sanctions when it is held to account through boycotts, through divesting from Israeli companies, through divesting from the illegal Israeli settlements in on Palestinian land, and through government sanctions. Those are the things that are needed, and Palestinians have been telling us that since 2005, BDS.
And that was PSNA co-chair John Minto on the comparisons between Israel and an apartheid-practicing South Africa of 1974 and why New Zealand should look to vote to back a vote against Israel.
That was The Wire.
Ko i rā te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nei te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki au mō tēnei rā. That's a wrap on the Wednesday Wire. Thanks to everyone who spoke with us today, the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March, Valerie Morse from Peace Action Wellington, Child Fund CEO Josie Pagani, and Palestine Solidarity Network Aotearoa co-chair John Minto. Nei rā hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakorongo ana. Thanks for tuning in to 95BFM. Next up is the Wednesday 1-4 with Bridge. Have a great day and keep it on the B.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.